We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it doesn't take that long again. Go dogs.
What's going on, Dog Nation? We are back, and you can tell how excited we are tonight. It's Lovelace. Yeah. It's Foster. We got Graham Coffee getting ready to come on. Trigger Trey's out right now. Because matter of fact, I don't know if you guys know, he actually put on Twitter again for the second year in a row that if the dogs won, he was going to get everybody a Hellcat. So he out there trying to make that money because he got to pay off these bets and pay off everything and everybody. But Foss, what's going on, man? I see what you got on. Tell the people what you're wearing right now because they can't even see it.
I'm wearing a national championship sweatshirt, but it's the old boy, man. It's old now, you know, since – you know, we knew back-to-back champs and all, man. I gotta put this one down, man, to get that new boy. But, you know, I had to put it on today just to rep a little bit while I'm out doing my daddy-ly duties. But, yeah, man, I'm back amongst the living. I tried to be a young man and do a 24-hour trip to L.A. And that thing whooped me, but it was well worth it.
Yeah, man, I'm sure it was worth it, man. You know, I'm happy that you got a chance to go out there. Graham was out there covering things for Dog Central and for 100 Sanford. You were out there posting videos and hanging out and doing all that good stuff, man.
I got some more stuff I'm going to put on the account, man.
Yeah.
I took a number of videos and pictures and put some more stuff out there, man. It was wonderful, man. It was great to see it. I was fortunate enough to, you know, be blessed with a ticket. To see it up close this time so I could see the guys just on the sidelines, just how they did post game and just see the reactions from the coaches and the train, like everybody. It was really nice, man. I enjoyed myself. And it was cold in LA, which was uncharacteristic. hey, man, like I said, all in all, it was worth it.
Well, man, they said it was raining, but it was raining national championships and touchdowns and,
hey, man,
and big know, boom. That's all it was doing out there in L.A.
Yeah, they say the Dawgs, you know, in the last couple of years, they got more national championships than losses.
Yeah, man.
That's crazy.
Think about that. I mean, I don't think – you know, when you put this in perspective, and it's funny because you broke out the old school sweatshirt. I have the blanket – with the same logo and everything else. And I promised myself, I said, I am not opening this blanket until we win another natty. Right before I go to watch the game, I said, you know, I'm going to break out my blanket. I'm going to break it out. I'm going to break it out now. Then boom, we explode. But that's amazing, man. You know, two national championships, one loss in 2 years, one loss. Man. It's an amazing feat. It's an amazing accomplishment. And
just think about that, man. This is a team that, you know, now I won't go ahead and call it. Yeah, I'm going to call it. The team that was supposed to be rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, was it a full rebuild? No. When you recruit the way Georgia recruits, you can't sit back there and just call it a full rebuild because your cupboard ain't bare like most teams would be. You know Facts. What I mean? So yeah, it was a rebuild, but – you know, listen, nobody expected this. Well, I expected us to go undefeated at minimum.
You did.
For the regular season. I looked at the schedule and I didn't see a loss on the schedule. But once you get to the Final Four, you know, you got to see what's up. You know, it's supposed to be tough for competition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it got hairy for us, you know, for a game. You know what I mean?
For 59 minutes
and 57 seconds. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man. But to look at last year's team,
mm-hmm.
that team, that was some of the best defense. That was historic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that defense right there, you know, like I say all the time, choking people out, you know what I mean, in that offense, you know, hitting on all cylinders, you know, despite being missing some key pieces. And this team still had a better year. You know what I mean? With all those youngsters, you know, lots of freshmen.
Right.
Lots of sophomores, you know, playing, you know, pivotal parts, you know, in for this team, man. It's just crazy. It's hard to think, like, you know what I'm saying.
It's hard to fathom, man.
It's hard to fathom. It's like, what's going on here? Like, you know, that's a masterful coaching job by that staff, man, because they are not – this was not supposed to happen in this fashion this year, considering what was lost, considering what was lost in season for us this year, mm-hmm. the amount of people, the amount of – the caliber of players that missed time this year. And them boys went 15-0, man.
Man, look,
it's crazy.
Foss, you got to look at it from two different angles. One, at the beginning of the season, Kirby said this was his best coaching staff. At the beginning of the season, I remember him saying that from top to bottom, he's never had the caliber of coaches that he thought that could build a national championship-type team. And that's coming off of a natty the year before, like you said, a legendary defense, right? So then I'm listening to the press conference, the post-conference with Kirby. And he's got Bullard on one side. He's got Brock on the other. And they ask him the question about this team. And he said, you know what? This team is just different. And he wasn't saying it like, okay, this team is different than last year because they're not the caliber of player. We know we got, you know, horses in the stable. We know that. What he was talking about was he didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't know how they were going to respond with getting punched in the mouth. He didn't understand what this team was going to do with all the youngsters after losing 16 people in the youth on the team. And he said this team was just different because they had a different mindset. When he said that we're going to be the hunter, they took that to heart. And they really took it as, you know what, everybody's doubting us. Everybody's basically saying that we're not the same team of last year. And they wanted to take that like with a grain of salt and say, you know what, let's prove everybody wrong. And when you go back to games like against Missouri, when they were down against Missouri, right?
Mm-hmm.
They come back. They fight back. Ohio State. They're not supposed to win that game against Ohio State.
Right.
Alabama, I don't care who it is. They ain't going to win that game. But this team here, man, was different.
They didn't blink.
Different. Didn't blink. Didn't budge.
They didn't blink, man. It was fascinating to see, man. I feel like Kirby did an amazing job psychologically with this team. Like,
I agree.
They, like, really, you know, like everyone saw the post game interview with what's my man with Nolan Smith.
Nolan. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's saying people thought we were going to be 7-5, but we undefeated. Nolan, come on, man. As young kids say, that's cap. No, nobody thought we were going to be 7-5.
Right,
but I
right.
truly believe that Kirby had those guys thinking that people thought they would be 7-5.
That's facts. Like, that's facts.
Like, Kirby had their team thinking that they were being disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
And they bought into it.
Yeah.
And they opened up a can because of it.
Yeah, he's a master manipulator. You know what I mean? And in a good way. It's a way of motivating, you know, getting these guys to buy in, to prepare. I even like the answer that Kirby gave, because automatically we know what's going to happen. They win the natty. It's back to back. Heck, even our boy Ben Watson comes on and says, look, enjoy this. Don't even start talking about three-peat. Enjoy it. But that's always going to be the question, right? What's next? What's next? And they asked Kirby, they said, you know, how long do you rest before you keep, you know, get on to the next year? He said, you know what, we got to start now. We got portal guys. We got guys that are looking to, you know, they're moving on, and I got to help them get to the NFL and paperwork and things like that. But if you notice, which was really interesting in that post-game interview, which was the next day, he didn't have guys that were leaving the program. He had guys up there that were staying. You talk about manipulation. You talk about optics. That was for everybody to see these guys are next. He had Bullard, he had Brock, and he was showing who else is coming to join us, because my guys, my dogs right here, just balled out in a national title game as sophomores, are still here, and they're looking for another one. They still hunting. So to me, it was master manipulation, man. He's the best right now. He's doing it better than anybody else out there in the nation.
Better than anyone else. You know what I mean? Like, I understand, you know, the pick with Sonny Dykes, coach of the year, because they weren't expected to do anything. You know, seventh in the conference. That's what the prediction was for them. And he got them to the national championship. I'd say that, yeah, you're probably coach of the year. Yeah. But outside of that, nobody doing it better than Kirby Smart.
Nobody.
Nobody. There's nobody even close.
And you know what I like to hear when people bring up the, you know, the whole dynasty thing and have they eclipsed Alabama. And we've asked everybody on the show, have they eclipsed them? Have they eclipsed them? Are they the new dynasty? They're the king of the mountain right now. This is, just put it that way. There's nobody doing it like them recruiting wise, mindset, culture. Nobody's doing it like them. You just got to give props.
It is what it is, man. We were one play away from being, for this being our third natty.
Facts.
And yeah, one play.
Facts.
We were one play away from this being the third natty in 7 years. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what the, what Nick Saban's first 7 years looked like, but, you know, I'm not the stat guy. I'm pretty sure Graham could probably rattle that off really quick. Yeah,
you know how you can do
but, going to three, winning two in 7 years, going to about, what, five SEC championships games, going to about five of those. Listen, man, that's impressive. That's impressive.
I don't care what league you're in, it's impressive.
If he never coaches another game, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He's in the College Football Hall of Fame if he never coaches another game. You know what I mean? He's done it that well. And man, I'm just proud of the guys, man. They just, like, so much could have went wrong, man. Look at a guy like Bullard, man. Dude has been lights out this season.
Yeah,
my man missed a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He had to be disciplined.
Right.
He had to be disciplined by the school and the team, and you know he came back and like. In that instance, he didn't blink. He came back, and his play went up. You know what I mean? He came back. He's like, man, I messed up. Mm-hmm. He took it to heart, and he came back, and he played some of the best ball on the team, especially in the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You got Starks back there. He was the hot button name, you know, at the beginning of the season. Young freshman guy making plays. You know what I mean? And, you know, he continued to make plays. He continued to do what we needed him to do. But that 22, man, 22 was like, hey, I'm back here too.
You know what I like about that with Bullard? Because, you know, I know we talk about Stetson. We talk about Nolan. Chris Smith.
Yeah.
Is a leader that came back.
Man.
And people can't – you can't overestimate – what that means for those guys when they came back. And Chris Smith was a stabilizing force. Bullard talked about that's his guy. That's his, you know, he's going to miss him the most out of all the guys that are leaving.
Yeah, man.
Me too. But it's almost like you got Chris Smith and Bullard, right? These guys that are able to come back, and it's like these guys rubbed off on each other. And, I don't know, man.
It was good that, you know, Starks could play this year, could start this year, and maybe he could provide some leadership for next year. He got all this experience this year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the secondary is going to be young again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A lot of talent, like immensely talented. One of the most talented groups that's going to be at the school.
Yeah,
they're going to still be wet behind the ear. You know, I mean?
You talk about youth.
Like, he's going to be like him and like Starks and Bullard going to be the OGs, and they ain't that old.
Yeah, and that back end, ain't no doubt about it. And it's funny because I was thinking about that too. You look at the guys that made plays in that game. You had Walker making a play.
Mm-hmm.
Mikael Williams with a sack. You had our boy Bear Alexander balled out. I mean, even TFL, I couldn't tell.
Sacks.
Right? I couldn't tell if it was Carter or if it was Bear at certain points. You got, like you said, Starks, Bullard, Lassiter coming back, Mondin, Dumas Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I mean, they're loaded on that, you know, on that defense. I can't wait. I mean, I'm going to celebrate. Right, I'm going to continue to celebrate now. Like, I can't wait.
Next year going to be interesting, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the assumption is that, you know, Beck is going to take over as the signal caller. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they're going to make it a competition, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They got to do that. But if whoever it is, if they play well, man, this team can be back. Back in
the schedule's four. Favorable, man. The schedule's a weird schedule.
The schedule is the schedule.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It is what it is. It's some teams on there that can play some ball. You know what I mean. We got Ole Miss, I believe, next year. You know,
Ole Miss, Tennessee, Auburn, can play ball. Florida's still on there.
It's still the usual suspects. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean. And then, of course, we'll be favored to win the East. Bama's going to be reloaded. I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback, but they're going to be reloaded. Mm-hmm. So probably going to have to see them again in the, you know, SEC championship. Like, it's some people on the schedule, you know what I mean? Like, at the beginning of this year, mm-hmm. like, people looked at their schedule and it was like thought weak sauce. Then you end up having Tennessee.
True.
Being ranked. Kentucky, Florida was Florida ranked when we played them?
Florida was on the – they were like, I think, maybe 24, 25, 26.
Yeah, like, you know, South Carolina might have a little momentum going into next year.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, the big game being Tennessee, knocking them out of contention. You know what I mean? So, you know, we're going to have to play some good ball, but, you know, that team's going to be loaded.
Yeah.
It's gonna be loaded.
And we talked about the defense. You did mention, I want to throw this out there. You got Stetson leaving. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, and I'm going to give mine too, what is Stetson's his legacy now as he leaves Athens, as he leaves as a two-time national champion, MVP of all four college football playoff games? What's his
name? MVP of all four?
All four.
That he's played in.
All four. All four.
He's the GOAT. It is absurd to think he's a freaking walk-on. He's a 5'10", 189-pound walk-on quarterback at the University of Georgia, and all he did was win. All he did was win.
That's it.
You know, yes, he's had great teams surrounding him. Mm-hmm. That does not guarantee you, Jack.
Right.
They don't guarantee you nothing.
Peyton Manning had him. A lot of players have had great teams around him.
Bryce Harper is a number one draft pick.
There you go.
With that team around him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what? His legacy ain't Stetson Bennett's.
Yeah, man, it's
you know what I mean. So
I looked at it like this.
You got to give that man, some props, man. Like he did what he was supposed to do, and you know what I was thinking about talking with some buddies the other day, like looking ahead to next year. Like, mm-hmm. yes, we got to have Beck or whoever takes over play well. I think we have to have two capable quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We lucked up, you know, it always takes a little bit of luck, but we'll take some luck, combine a little luck with that offensive line, with Stetson's toughness and ability to stay out of harm's way, and that was a perfect recipe. Typically, you need two quarterbacks to play. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We got lucky with Stetson being, you know, he was available mm-hmm. all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, that was a huge part of this season, too, his availability. You know, you got your leader on the floor for 15 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That doesn't happen. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's you know, like, just look around. Bryce missed a game.
Mm-hmm.
My man
Hooker.
Hendon got hurt late. Out.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? It just, you know, it doesn't happen like that for most people. And we were fortunate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna say this, and I want people to really understand what I'm talking about, which is, I don't care about your political affiliation, what you think about Herschel. Herschel was the GOAT. Stetson is now the GOAT.
He's the face of Georgia. Like, there's, you know, there's Herschel and what he did. And then, you know, I feel like some of his, you know, politics have overshadowed
what he meant to the
program. And, you know, it kind of, you know, some people loved it. Some people, you know, he rubbed the wrong way. Now you got Stetson, who's just boom, back to back national champion. And, you know, like, he's the face now. Like, anything, not just Herschel, but it's kind of like, we'll never forget 1980. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? But kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, what have you done for me lately? And mm-hmm. that championship kind of fades in the background, especially with it being back-to-back now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the old championship kind of fades. It's kind of like, 80, you know, like, nobody remembers 42. You know what I mean? 1940, was it 42 or 47?
Did they 42, win? 42.
42.
Heck, nobody's going to remember that vintage sweatshirt you got on right now.
Yeah, this the old boy. You know what I mean? I got to get the new. I got some new coming on the way, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
But it's just from people that make, you know, gear that I like, you know. Mm-hmm. But none of the official stuff. I'll order some of the official stuff later, but I had to get one from my boy Frico Rico, artist here in Atlanta. He made the Stet Quavius shirt. I got to show it to you. You got to order you one.
Heck yeah, he does
ghost too. I didn't even get to wear my Jalen Carter one. He did one with Jalen holding up Jaden Daniels. he's an artist in Atlanta who does amazing work. I'll send it to you guys. And I ordered one from Dime Life, my boy DJ Williams, who I played with. You know, he started Dime Life. It was pretty much exclusively Miami stuff, and he picked up OU, Georgia, and
Florida
this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I ordered the back-to-back, you know, hoodie from Dime Life too. But I'm gonna get the official stuff soon too, man. I gotta rip and rub it in these folks' face. You did.
Yeah, mine's on its way. Hey, fellas, before we go any further, we got to give props to our sponsor for the Roll Up Network and the 100 Sanford Podcast. I'm talking about vacay. That's right. Relax, unwind, and take a vacay. We're talking premium Delta 8 products, leaving your mood relaxed and chilled and with a light alternative to cannabis. They got the vapes. They got the edibles. They got the things that can help you sleep in various flavors that you will like. Whether you partake in it or not, you might know somebody that does. So send them on over to vacay. Take a vacay. That's right. Use the promo code 100 Sanford for 10% off all your Delta 8 THC products. Premium products delivered right to your mailbox. Federally legal. That's right. Use the promo code 100 Sanford for 10% off all your Delta 8 THC products. Take a vacay. As clients, I'm going to let you know. You'll be chill and relaxed. Take a vacay, baby.
Graham, what's up? You're in the building.
Fellas.
Man, we just been glowing right now.
The official media spokesman for 100 Sanford.
I don't know about all that. You know,
I'm bootleg. I was out there with, you know, I had me a double Jameson cooling.
Yes.
It was fine. Wasn't it great? And I can tell you, both of you guys, wasn't it great to be able to watch the national championship and not worry this time?
Yeah, man. I mean, I never imagined that. Like,
the game was over quick. We was like, we chilling
for the second quarter. It was over.
Dude, 4 quarters out.
It was, yeah. The moment that Georgia answered that touchdown drive that they had to go up to, like, you know, they cut it to 17-7. It was like, okay, you know, like, here we go, right? Or no, they cut it to 10-7. And it was like, okay, yeah, like, mm-hmm, here we go. And then Georgia goes right down the field, scores a touchdown, and then, yeah, gets the ball back and goes, like, once that game was 17-7, Kirby went into, like, death march mode, which there was a guy, I went to the Athens Goes West concert at the Troubadour on the night before the game. It was a bunch of Athens musicians like Mike Mills from REM and a bunch of guys in the Future Birds. And then at the game, all those guys were sitting right behind me. So it was fun talking to them. But one of them introduced me to the term, the Bainbridge boa constrictor, instead of the Kirby death march. And like, Georgia went straight into Bainbridge boa constrictor mode in the second quarter on that 11 play 92 yard drive. And yeah, once it was 24-7, it was a wrap. But the thing that was like the, I don't know, the play for me that will stand out on that game was, you know, Dogs go up 31-7 and TCU is trying to do something before the half, and they get that sack on second down and put him in third and long. And Javon Buller just straight up baited Duggan into that pick. Mm-hmm. Like, he begged him to throw it, and it would have been a pick six if he hadn't tripped over his own guy. Mm-hmm. But, like, that was one of those where it was just like, man, like, they're so dominant right now and so in this game that they're basically leaving guys open so they can go get one more before the end of the half. You know what I mean? Like, so they can go get a touchdown with 30 seconds left in the half. It was – we'll never see another national championship game like it, I don't think.
No.
Just Georgia, but in college football, period.
That was pretty sickening.
when you look at what Kirby did, man, I mean, really, like you said, the death march, he wanted to leave no stones unturned. He wanted to set a statement for the entire nation. Not only was Georgia the best team in the nation, that it's the only team in the nation right now. You look at, I mean, putting up 65 points, that's not really Kirby. I mean, heck, we've been waiting for them to put up 60-something points, right? We know that they can, but 65 in a championship game?
What have we said all year? I know I've said it all
year. They hadn't peaked all year, right?
They haven't peaked.
That's right.
They never peaked. They won all those games without peaking, and they peaked in the Natty. It was damn near a perfect game. You had that busted play. I don't know what the hell that was about. Like, I was looking at his eyes. Like, that was really weird. Like, I didn't understand that bust. But we were busted play away from probably 70-0.
Yeah,
and that's like, they peaked.
I don't think they would have scored, George. I don't think they would have scored. I really don't.
Yeah. No. That was a long play. You know. And then once you get them that close, you know, they start with your misdirections and they're able to run the quarterback and all that stuff. And, you know, but other than that, man,
I thought they actually ran the ball pretty okay at times in the first half. The D. McCardo kid is a tough runner. The running back, I walked away with a ton of respect for him. But, you know, it didn't matter because Georgia was scoring on every drive. And, Georgia game scripted them out of their offense in about a quarter and a half. You know what I mean?
I got hooked up with a first row ticket that came out of nowhere. That was mind blowing to me that it fell in my lap. And so I was close and I took a picture of Thorson. He was just over there trying to stay warm. And I took a picture and I posted it. I was like, this guy is not going to play tonight. And he almost didn't. He had one play. He doesn't kick off, and he's not the holder, and he had one punt. So he literally crossed the white lines one time.
I mean, that's how dominant they were. I mean, it was and you know, I don't know. There's not too much you could even say. You were just so overwhelmed by the moment. And like you mentioned, you know, you could relax and everything else. My son actually looked at me and said, "Dad, this is boring." Like, he got, I mean, because he's so used to excitement, right?
Yeah. And he sounds like most people, except me. I enjoy, like, I'm a sicko. I'm a sick person.
That's
like,
great.
I'm sick. I like to see, I want to see you beat to a pulp. And I enjoy every moment of it. So this game's not boring to me.
It wasn't boring, but it was like methodical.
But a lot of people think that, though. A lot of people think that way. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it was the least watched BCS or CFP national championship ever. So since 98, it was the least watched championship game.
But see, I wonder when those ratings started to dip. I guarantee you probably within the first quarter, people were like, okay, you know, national championship. But I guarantee you after that second quarter, people were tapping out. They were like, you know what? I got other things I can do.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of people. At least that's what they said.
Yeah. Yeah.
You watch.
I mean, the one thing
I checked out.
I would say is, you know, George, you were talking about like they peaked and they definitely did. But, you know, I've written all year long in my 12 takeaway game recaps that like Todd Monken, like he's always got his eyes down the road. And this has been like a big long con for him. And he only pulls out a few plays a week, basically, that aren't vanilla. Like he schemes up a few touchdowns a week to make sure Georgia's got the margin they need to win the game. And then it's, you know, counter left, counter right, slants, you know, like there's nothing crazy going on. It's vanilla offense. And I think, like, especially with it being the last game for Stetson and, you know, having a quarterback change next year, like, I think that it finally just hit the point where it was like, okay, like, I'm going to call it. Because this is it, you know, like we're done. This is kind of the end of this little run with Bennett, and we're going to have different personnel under center next year. And it was beautiful, man. Like, it was beautiful to watch. It was the payoff, right? Like, but I do think, like, and I argued all year long, like, I saw people, you know, get on Twitter, like, you know, Tennessee writers being like, well, Georgia only scored 27 on Tennessee. It's like, no. Like, they scored however much they needed to score to know they were going to win the game, and then they went into relaxing.
Do not get it twisted.
Georgia could have thrown for 5,000.
Yes, it was a nasty day, like Tennessee, nasty day. You know, it was evident that Tennessee wasn't going to score. Let's get this game over with and get the team off the field healthy. Like, that's like, all.
Even that SEC championship game against LSU, it's like, yeah, they put up 50, but they scored 35 in the first half, man. Like,
no question. Like
Georgia, I've seen a lot of people talking about, like, you know, this year's team versus last year's. And, like, last year's defense was special, man. Like, they could make mistakes on the back end, and they could misplay things, and they were just so good athletically that it didn't matter. But this was the best Georgia offense we've ever seen, and I will maintain that. Like, this Georgia offense was different level than anything we've ever seen in Athens, in my opinion.
Do you realize that Stetson has not thrown a fourth quarter pass in 8 games?
Yeah.
You said 5,000 yards.
He threw for 4,000 yards. He threw for 4,000.
Yes. I mean, his numbers could have been insane. Right. He would have won the Heisman had he played more in the fourth quarter.
Damn,
and like some of these other teams.
He didn't throw a pass in eight games.
Of the games that he did throw a pass in the fourth quarter, he only had one attempt. Like, there was only like 4 games this year where he like really played in the fourth quarter.
Put this in perspective. Beck comes in the fourth quarter and he's not throwing passes. So you start talking about like the numbers, what the scores really could have had been had we played some of our players. I mean, this was a dominant team. We were saying it all year long that they were dominant in a lot of ways. We just had not seen them peak. And they showed it on Saturday, or on Monday night. Phenomenal, just phenomenal. Graham, I'll ask you, because I asked Foss, what's Stetson's legacy to you?
Man, I think it's a really unique legacy because after what happened the last 2 years, and especially after what happened on Monday night, putting up 65 in a national championship game, like remember that all throughout 2020 and 2021, the narrative was that Kirby Smart was a great football coach whose one Achilles heel was that he didn't know how to manage a quarterback room.
Right.
And from now on, the guys that play that position at Georgia for the coming at least decade, probably longer, they're all going to be five-star dudes, right? Like, they're going to be the bluest of blue chips. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, like, Stetson is kind of representative of what this program – like, he came in the last – like, I don't think people realize, like, the last game that Georgia played before Stetson committed to UGA as a preferred walk-on was the 2016 Liberty Bowl against TCU. And he goes out with a 58-point win over TCU. And so, like, it's kind of like watching the Georgia program go from a school that's going to take a two-star kid, even as a preferred walk-on, and is going to actually need to bring him back on scholarship because Justin Fields dipped out of town. And all this was, like, all this chaos. And there was a lot of anger, I think, in the fan base for a long time. Maybe I think some of the heat that Stetson got was – not just because of his play, but, like, I think he represented to some people, like, Georgia maybe being outgunned at that position. But what he really represents to me is, like, elite development. And it's across the roster, right? And it's, like, all the talk about the recruiting is true, but Javon Bullard, three-star. You know, like, you can – Ladd McConkey, three-star. Like, go down the list, man. Like, some of the most important players on these last two teams. Jordan Davis, three-star. And so, you know, I think that is where Georgia has really separated themselves. Alabama's roster this year was 92% blue chips. That's pretty much everybody but special team guys. But Georgia is not – you know, like, they've signed these kids that are 4 and 5 stars, but they're not star chasing. Like, they are doing their own evaluation. And I think Stetson is representative of that evaluation and how often they hit on these guys that are overlooked. And I think in the end for him, there is something very poetic about, like, he is final form Georgia in a lot of ways, man. Like the kid that, like, his first ever start against Auburn during the COVID season, like, he gets caught on camera throwing a dip in after he comes out of the game. Like that's, you know, like, that's as Georgia as it gets, dude. It really is. Like, you know, the kid from down there in Blackshear that, you know, throws in a fat chaw on the sidelines, like, he's the one that breaks a 41-year drought and doesn't just break it once, but breaks it twice. And I think it's something kind of beautiful and poetic that, like, that's how it ended, that, like, he kind of, you know, was the guy that delivered Georgia out of this 4-decade stretch of misery. Like, it was one of our own that grew up going to games that wanted nothing more than to be a Bulldog, and that, you know, fought through JT Daniels and Jamie Newman and Justin Fields and Jake Fromm and all these guys, right? Like, you know, didn't necessarily beat him out, but he outlasted all of them. And I do think resume-wise, he's got to be the greatest Georgia player of all time. Is he the greatest athlete? No, he's not the greatest athlete on his team. Like, he's not the greatest athlete on the starting 11 of that offense. Like, but as far as what he did, you know, you can't – last year you could kind of – like, create an argument or a narrative that, like, he managed them to a national title, and he did make some big throws when it mattered most in the fourth quarter in Indianapolis. But, like, this year, you know, that offense relied on him a lot, especially early.
We needed him.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And Kirby mentioned it. Kirby brought it up himself. Yeah. Go ahead, George.
When you back it up, I back it up and I think about one thing. It's kind of like – Kirby and Stetson are, like, a little similar. Like,
yeah,
nobody, I don't think anybody would see Kirby at your local Kroger and think that was an all-SEC safety. No disrespect to my man. That's my guy. But nobody look at Kirby and say, hey, that was an all-SEC safety. Not even 30 years ago they would say that. They would look at their guy and be like, okay, all right. But mm-hmm. Kirby was an all-SEC safety. He had
they got to name somebody.
he had some numbers. You know what I mean? He was kind of an unassuming dude himself, you know. And so, and with Stetson, I go back to what you said, and it's crazy. I never thought of it this way, but that you mentioned him in the development aspect of this staff. When I think development, I never really thought of it in the sense of Stetson, but he's been developed as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He's a much better player than what we saw 3-4 years ago. You know what I mean? That's a testament to him and the staff. Like, he's a legitimate quarterback. You know what I mean? He doesn't have, you know, we're going to see what throws he can make, you know, next NFL preseason. You know, we're going to see, you know, can he hit that cross the field out? Right. You know what I mean? We're going to see, you know, what he does when it's not perfect. You know, he didn't get touched a lot this year.
No.
You know what I mean?
Nine times.
I'm here to tell you, offensive line are hard to build in the NFL. Mm. And he may end up with let's keep it funky. He's going to be playing with the third and fourth offensive line. Mm-hmm. Wherever he lands this year, and we're gonna see what he does in those situations. He's gonna get hairy for him back there. So, but I say to say though, he is a legitimate quarterback, and I don't think you could have said that 3 or 4 years ago, as it relates to top tier play and definitely the next level. Like, teams had to watch some. Like, you know, when I was scouting, you know, you get all your tape done and, you know, you want all the hay in the barn in, like, December. Stetson was part of that hay this year for NFL teams. You know, I got calls, you know what I mean? Hey, I'm watching Stetson, you know, this kid looks pretty good, you know what I mean? And then you might get called like, hey, well, in this game right here, he kind of came back down to earth. Yeah, you know, he's not as physically gifted as, you know, a lot of the guys are going to watch, but nobody would even put him on the NFL radar 3 years ago.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Nobody put him on the radar a year ago. I mean,
yeah, you know? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Even you're right. You're definitely right about that. And he's still small. He still hadn't grown any, but like, you have to just how he played, you know, if he didn't play as good, you know, and still won, you know, it'd be like, okay, right off in the sunset, go be a lawyer.
Yeah.
Now he's gonna get a legitimate shot at the NFL, no matter what happens. You know what I mean? And that's a testament to the development that staff did with.
I do have a couple of questions for you on that NFL front with Stetson. Like, first off, you know, obviously he doesn't have, you know, he's not the 6'4" with the rocket arm and all of that. But, like, I think he'll run somewhere around a 4.6, 40.
Yeah.
At the combine.
He can run.
And then I guess my question for you from the intangible side of things is, like, how much will it help him in the draft process that he will probably interview well, but also when you flip on the tape, in the biggest games he's ever played in the biggest moments when things weren't going well, was when he played his best over the last couple of years. Like, will that be something that somebody falls in love with, you think?
They're going to look at it. NFL people are still definitely big on height, weight, speed. Like, sure. They can't get away from it. And I think I think rightfully so. If you step out on an NFL field on a Sunday, or even go to a practice, I'm sure you've been to plenty of practices, Lamar, up there, and you know, the Steelers.
Facts.
That thing looks different, don't it?
Yeah, man.
That thing is different.
Yeah. It's fast. It's powerful. I mean, it's like being right next to a locomotive.
Yeah, man, it's real deal.
Yeah,
so the premium being put on height, weight, speed is legit, you know. But you have a few, you know, every now and then you have a few anomalies. You know, you're not gonna have a ton of them, but you have a few. I look at stats in the same vein as when I was scouting, looking at Old Dominion tape and somebody like Heinicke. You know, he's not a guy that feels any of the height, weight, speed categories. You know, but he's gotten to play in the league. You know, he's won some games. You know, played some meaningful games, started some games, and I look at him just like, you know, he's thicker than Stetson. You know what I mean? But as far as the same characteristics, they're very similar. I thought Heinicke could run. You know what I mean? He seemed like a slinger, had some moxie to him. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, that's how I see Stetson. And you know, those guys get to play. You know what I mean? Quarterbacks are hard in the NFL. You know, like if you're competent, you probably can keep a job in the NFL. You don't have to be great, you know what I mean? But if you're competent, because they don't grow on trees, you know what I mean? You know, quarterbacks are hard, like quarterbacks are special. Like competent quarterbacks are very special. That's why they hang around so long. You know what I mean? You got guys that have been backups for 15 years.
Like Chase Daniel, man, keeps getting them checks.
Because you know, when your main guy goes down, you need somebody that's competent. And it ain't that many walking the earth. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of like linemen. You know, quarterbacks, they're just rare humans.
You know, I was going to give that comparable with Taylor Heinicke. It's amazing that you brought that up, because that's where I see Stetson as, that type of player, that kind of guy that can come in and give you some juice if something happens, someone goes down, you know, maybe backing up a Hurts in Philadelphia, something like that, where he plays similar to those styles. But let's transition real quick. And the reason I say that is because they asked Kirby the question too. When do you transition to the next year? I want to transition pretty quickly to the next year, fellas. Not in terms of record, nothing like that. How do you like this roster? Because we saw a lot of our guys, and George, we were touching upon it, you know, before Graham came on. We saw a lot of our young guys ball out, and it's like the lights are turned on for those guys also to come back and do something that's never, ever been done. Three in a row, right? What do you guys think about next year's team and the makeup of it so far?
Might have to get off on a bit, but they're in a sweet spot, man, that most teams don't get into. Like, this year was supposed to be the rebuild. Like, it legitimately was supposed to be the rebuild. Not a rebuild in the sense that you lost everything last year. Not in a rebuild in the sense that your cupboard was bare. It's a rebuild in the sense that you lost a lot of talented guys in the NFL, a lot of experience in the NFL. Like, those guys, those first-rounders were seniors. You know what I mean? Like, most of them. You know, I can't remember everybody, but there was a lot of seniors that got drafted. And so nobody expected them to win it all. You know, I expected them to go undefeated in regular season and then take it from there. You know, this was supposed to be the rebuild. And so you win it all in your rebuild, and then now you got the year that you're supposed to be – now you got the year coming that you're supposed to win it all. And they're going to have a chance to win it all, barring they have good QB play. You know what I mean? So it's rare. They're in a rare position that, you know, it's kind of like when the timing is right. You know what I mean? For whatever thing in your life, you know, sometimes you just fall in the right timing. Mm-hmm. This is the right timing.
Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts, Graham?
I mean, I think you look at it. We've just talked about Stetson a lot and all that he's done, but I think what's unique about what Georgia has built is it's not a quarterback dependent system. Like it's a line of scrimmage dependent, you know, way of playing football and way of beating teams. And I think the offensive line, you know, has a chance to maybe be even better next year. I think this offensive line really kind of they struggled to run the ball in some pretty significant games early in the season, and they credit to Stacey Searles and all those guys. They figured it out as it went, but I didn't think they were elite in, you know, power type situations and short yardage situations. It took a while for that to work. And so I think that OL will be better. You talk about a pass protection standpoint, like you're going to have bookends of Amarius Mims. And I mean, I've heard from some people, Warren McClendon very well may come back. So if you have those two dudes at tackle next year, that's crazy.
Right? Yeah, it's nuts.
And then, yeah, I think, you know, the defense will probably be better, right? Like Jalen Walker, I don't see any reason why he's not Dallas Turner next year. You know what I mean? Like he's going to be a pass rush nightmare. There is a lot of – Georgia's kind of done all this while lacking a true pass rush specialist. Mm-hmm. You know, like Adam Anderson was gone for the second half of last year. Some of the bodies on that roster are 6'5", 6'6", like with late. Like they're Leonard Floyd kind of body types that Georgia hasn't had in a while. Mm-hmm. And my money would be on one of those guys making the leap this offseason and being able to come in and just really slam the door in second and third and long situations. And, yeah, it could get scary, man. But I think, you know, the question mark – is probably Carson Beck. I don't know that it's definitely not a question mark from a talent standpoint, but all this conversation we were just having about Stetson, like that position is, and there's some intangibles required, especially when you're taking over the wheel of a, you know, of a Corvette, like the Georgia football program. And so I think that's going to be the question, is just the motivation and the staying humble. Right. And, you know, someone that was at the game told me that Kirby walked up to a section of the players' parents and held up a three.
One, two, three.
Yeah. Mouthed out, it starts now, right, on Monday night during the celebration. And so as far as, you know, looking forward and when that starts, I think if Kirby says it starts now, then it starts now, right? Like, why would I question the boss, man? But they have a legitimate chance to do this again, but I think – the way that I would probably approach this offseason if I was a Georgia fan is they just did something that's rarely ever been done. And, you know, what you want is, like, looking at that schedule, I think, you know, there's a really, really high chance they're back in the four-team tournament again next year. And when we get to that point, we'll have a much better idea what their chances are of matching up against those teams.
Yeah, and me and George, we were talking about it before you came on, but when you know, you mentioned Walker, Bear Alexander, dude, was a monster. I mean, it's like the lights turned on, right? It's like, and some of these guys, which I find amazing, they play best under chaos. They play best when the lights are turned on. Some, you know, there's a lot of freshmen, a lot of young guys who don't get the reps that really kind of wilt under the pressure, right? I mean, we saw from TCU, the lights turned on, you know, wasn't so bright against Michigan. But when everybody's looking at you, some guys fall apart. These guys actually embraced it. It's almost like, you know, they took the nuclear power that was coming from and all of a sudden became a superhero, right? And next year, you start looking at guys like Mikel Williams, who started to ball out as the season grew, right? It's almost like the lights turned on for him. Everything slowed down. George brought up our boy Bullard. Bullard's going to be a monster. I mean, and I know you love Chris Smith like I do. I think Bullard is that Chris Smith guy, right? He's that guy that comes back next year, leader in the clubhouse, guy that's done it before, can show these young guys, hey, look, this is the way to do it. But at the same time, they want to leave a legacy as well. You know, three in a row, three-peat. I can see guys like Carson Beck coming back locked in. And as long as everything stays the same, and right now it is, you know, knock on wood, fingers crossed, no coaches leaving, things like that. You know, as long as things stay consistent, these guys can really, really be dangerous next year. And I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and I mean, I think, you know, it's like, don't forget about Dirty Dan, right? Dan Jackson, yeah. Like, he's played some good football over the years. And
so Dan, know, I didn't realize Dan was underclass. He didn't,
Redshirt junior.
Oh, okay. So we get Dan back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's got another 2 years if he wants it because of COVID rules.
Super senior rule. Yeah. He can actually take that 6 year if he wants.
But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of talent left. I also think, you know, the really like kind of fascinating, interesting thing is just, I do think that, you know, Georgia's defense this year was still probably the best defense in the country, but like they did all this without a real like zero tech, you know, like there wasn't a true nose tackle on that roster. And you have Jamal Jarrett coming in, who is 6'6", 350. Like, he's a Jordan Davis type, right? Yep. And so who knows how soon he'll be ready to play. But, like, if all of a sudden you got somebody to put in the middle over a center and let Dumas Johnson and Mondon scrape into holes behind him, damn, dude. Like, that gets even scarier, right? Like, it could be scarier for – opponents, but I don't know, man. I'm definitely gonna enjoy this one for a while, I can tell you that.
Yeah, man. And before we get up out of here, I know George has got to cut loose. Graham, you got some things happening at the spot, and we all got some things. Just some recruiting news, some quick notes. We mentioned it on the last show, but hey, Peyton Woodyard actually committed to Georgia, the number two safety in the country for class of 24. That is huge, because to get that young guy in the fold, I mean, that's one of those guys who's going to be locked in recruiting for you. And heck, I mean, you never know. You might also get the kid, KJ Bolden, number one safety out of Buford, right? Who's a UGA, right? He's different too. He's a UGA lean right now that a lot of people are projecting. Dylan Raiola, a lot of smoke.
Yeah,
a lot of smoke. The number one quarterback in the country for 24 may want to come to Athens and enjoy this party that we got going out.
He was in the house for. I could imagine being a recruit watching that. I'm signing.
I would have been gullible tonight,
right?
I would have been gullible. You know what I'm saying? I signed on an off week at Athens, and like, I was like, I love this place.
George, did you play with his dad?
Yeah, I played with Dominic Raiola. He was the center when I was in Detroit. What has me excited about the kid just in general is his dad knew a lot. His dad knew everything. Like, he was one of those centers that he knew what was coming. He knew who was blitzing, who was this, that, like, and I'm sure he's imparted some of that onto the quarterback. You know, the center is the quarterback he's the second quarterback of the team. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
He knows where the ball should go and all that stuff. Dominic was really smart. He was crazy. You know what I'm saying? But behind all the craziness, he's a very smart, cerebral center. And I'm pretty sure he's imparted that to Dylan. So Dylan is probably advanced in that regard. But, yeah, they had the whole family there, man. Kids I hadn't seen. They had a kid there that wasn't even born when we played together. You know, the daughter was probably 5'6", you know, when we were playing together. Dylan was probably like 1 year old. You know what I mean? And so it was cool to see them. I had not seen I probably had seen Dominic probably more recently, but I had not seen the whole family in ages since our days in Detroit. So it was good to see them. And it was a surprise. I didn't know they were going to be there, but they were at the team hotel eating and was able to see them. So I hope we gave an impression. You know what I mean? You know, he's legacy at Nebraska. You know, his dad played there. His uncle is coaching there now. I know his uncle too. You know.
Yeah, but there's a lot of legacy guys not going to those schools. You know,
no question. But
let's just bring them down.
We still got to put up a fight. And why not, man? Like, Georgia. You know, you look at the numbers that Stetson put up. You can get your numbers.
Yeah.
You can achieve everything you want to achieve. You know what I mean? Heck, you know, we've had a number one pick quarterback before as well. You know what I mean? So
Well, so, you know what? This last couple years, George, man, it should have really taken away the narrative for a lot of things. And I think even Kirby brought it up during his his press conference when he was talking about Brock, right? He said Monken had to sell Brock on, look, I'm going to bring you in here and I'm going to make you an All-American tight end. He had to sell him on that, right? So now it's the same thing. He had to sell people in the quarterback position, especially from a national narrative. People saying Georgia can't develop quarterbacks. Well, Stetson's been developed. He's the blueprint. You know, from a walk-on quarterback, what can you do with a five-star with supreme talent and working under Monken and these guys that they got going on in Athens? So, I can't wait. You know what I mean? But let's continue to enjoy this. I think we got the party going on Saturday. We got the big-time event down there at Athens at Sanford Stadium. So, everybody enjoy it. But, you know, hopefully we'll have somebody on next week to talk about, just the whole ride, the event, as a family member or a player during this entire season. So, that's our goal, to bring somebody on next week. But you guys got anything else before we get up out of here tonight?
Man, all I'll say is, like, it felt like we were in a nightclub on Monday night, man. Like, it was a party, man. Like, and like people were just like dancing whenever the PA was playing music, and like just hugging strangers and laughing and yucking it up. And like, I mean, I think almost, it was almost as fun just watching those young guys come in and just keep the throttle down. Cause it was that sneak peek towards the future.
Fun, but, yeah. It was definitely fun.
I'll remember it forever, man. I'll remember it forever.
Yeah, I got some confetti that I put in the bag. And,
me too. You know,
yes, sir.
All right, fellas. Well, until next week, as always, see you at 100 Sanford.
Yes, sir.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Back to back.
Bike to bike.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.